White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 754.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with all of our great supporters via Patreon.com. I am your host, Van Allen Plexico.
I'm John Ringer.
No, it's not. You are still not here, John. You're not here, and
I'm not Van Allen Plexico.
No, you are not Van, and you're not here. You are still out on assignment.
It's harsh.
It is harsh, but you are. You're out on assignment. And so, in your place, I'm going to carry the show, hopefully tonight, by myself. But I'm going to do it a little bit differently. I have a whole format set up to do something experimental tonight. But before we get into that here, I want to once again thank Delvin Williams for sitting in as our special guest co-host last week. Delvin was awesome, and we've gotten lots of great notes thanking him for doing it and saying what a great job he did, which is absolutely true, and I appreciate it. That being said, this is Countdown. The fifth story in the countdown tonight, the Auburn Fun Meter. Well, you knew it was going to have to be said. You knew it was coming. We were going to have to go to the Auburn Fun Meter. And here we are. So, yeah, where's my Auburn Fun Meter this week? Well, it's football season, so I'm not hating life entirely. But Alabama won, even though I picked Ole Miss. We'll get to that. Auburn, of course, did something out there in College Station. And, you know, it's funny. The last time that Auburn played out in College Station, I got COVID. And I'm not entirely sure that this wasn't worse than that. I might have preferred having COVID again to what we went through on Saturday. I think I would have taken one for the team. So my Auburn Fun Meter is on about a 2 this week. But that's a positive, hopeful too, and hopefully it'll get better going forward. How about those orange face masks, by the way? Well, they really made a difference. I wanted to say, quickly, special commentary on the face masks. You know, we get things like the different colored face masks, and we get things like the different colored sleeves and this, that, and the other. The metallic stripe on the helmet. We get those things in lieu of actual alternate uniforms. And we're never going to get actual alternate uniforms. There's just too many people that would lose their poop if we did. And so that's what we get, is those face masks. And I hope you all just soaked that up and enjoyed it, because that's our version of being Oregon, is having an orange face mask. But I do point out, of course, that Notre Dame, one of the most conservative traditional programs in college football, wore all green with their gold helmets this past week. And it almost worked out in a win over Ohio State, which was pretty cool. To which you might reply, well, but Notre Dame has a history of wearing green jerseys. To which I reply, Auburn has a history of wearing orange jerseys that goes way back before Doug Barfield. But anyway, that's not remotely the most important thing, of course. I just wanted to point it out that you got your orange face masks. I hope you enjoyed it, because that's pretty much all we're going to get. Now, how big of a football day was this past Saturday? We're going to get into everything. Don't worry. We're going to get in the Auburn-Texas A&M game in just a second, but I just want to get some preliminary things out of the way. How big was Saturday? At one point, I had the St. Louis City soccer game on the TV, because that's what my family wanted to see. I had the Ohio State-Notre Dame game on my iPhone, and I had the LSU-Arkansas game on the iPad. So there was a lot going on, and that's all after the Auburn game and the Alabama game. So there was a lot going on Saturday. I certainly enjoyed it. But the main thing, of course, that we're going to talk about here in our in the first story on the countdown, or the fifth story, I guess, is the Auburn-Texas A&M game. I thought it was interesting, a couple of observations before we get into the nitty-gritty of it. I thought it was interesting that Bobby Petrino having a backup quarterback coming in, because let's face it is Bobby Petrino's backup quarterback, not Jimbo Fisher. Bobby Petrino having a backup quarterback coming in and doing well against Auburn after Auburn knocks the starter out. We've seen that movie before. It was called the 2010 Arkansas game. We put Ryan Mallett out early in the 2010 Arkansas game. They put their little backup guy in, and he proceeded to slices and dices. If not for Cam being able to outscore them, we would have lost that game badly. And, of course, in this game Saturday night, we just didn't have any offense at all. And in fact, the numbers are pretty staggering. All five of Auburn's offensive line starters were penalized during the game. We allowed 7 sacks and 15 tackles for loss, which is mind-boggling. Auburn passed for a total of 56 yards in the game, completing 9 out of 26 passes for 56 yards. That, too, is astonishing. Robbie Ashford had 25 rushing yards on 8 carries. He completed 1 of 4 passes for 4 yards. Gurner completed 2 of 7 passes for 8 yards. So, 4 yards, 8 yards, and then whatever that was that Peyton Thorne did, which it's shocking to say that the worst of the three quarterbacks was worse than what I just quoted Ashford and Gurner is doing. That's absolutely astonishing. And, you know, at some point that's on the offensive line. At some point that's on the receivers. You know, even the running backs, and of course we lost. We now know that we've probably lost Damari Alston, who I've argued all along was our best running back going into this season. We've lost him probably for half the season at least with a separated shoulder. That was the same thing that knocked Bo Jackson out in his junior year for, I believe, 6 games. And Bo used to heal really, really phenomenally fast, and he missed 6 games in the really heart of the season. So, yeah, not good, not good. After this game Saturday, Auburn now has the second worst total offense in the SEC. I don't know who's worse than us, Vandy, I guess. Number 83 nationally. That's with all those running backs. I mean, even if our passing game isn't working, you'd think with all the great running backs we have, we wouldn't be next to last in offense in the SEC and 83rd nationally, but there we are. We obviously have the worst passing offense, the worst passing efficiency in the SEC. In terms of sacks allowed, we are 12th in the SEC and 112 nationally. But we went into that game with the number one rushing offense in the SEC. We come out of it with the number two rushing offense in the SEC. And I'll say this, we're going to play another really good defense, obviously, on Saturday with Georgia, which we'll get to in a little bit. But honestly, I do think A&M had a really good defense, certainly a good rushing defense and a good pass rush. So even if A&M's pass defense wasn't great, they were able to do enough disruptive stuff to cover that up, which had the effect of A&M's defense seeming like, you know, just a monster. So A&M may turn around and do terribly in games to come. I don't know. But they had a good matchup against us because they were able to disrupt our passing before it ever got to the secondary. And, of course, when we were able to pass, some of the passes just sailed right over the heads of the receivers, which was not the receivers' fault, by the way. I do want to point out, by the way, Eugene Asante strikes again. He had a 67-yard fumble return for a touchdown, and he could have committed homicide on Jimbo if he'd wanted to and gotten away with it. That was the most amazing thing there, is that as Eugene Asante took the ball and headed up the field, you know, there standing there in front of him was Jimbo Fisher. And, oh, I mean, it's like, you know, we're going to lose anyway. But I do have to say this for Eugene Asante. Eugene. There you go, Eugene. That was just for you. Good job. And he is really becoming the MVP on defense. It's pretty amazing. All right. Now, I have some observations that John sent in. I'm going to pass them on along to you, and I will react to them. Who is it exactly that's going to be speaking?
I'm John Ringer.
John? All right. John, you've got some observations you sent in from parts unknown. And I mean, a lot of what John is saying here is he looks at the game and he says,
"What am I missing?"
Yeah, well, you're not missing anything because
I love armored football and I love defense,
and that's what we've got to hang our hat on, because not a lot of offense going on, I mean, our offense—they're
an embarrassment. They should be kicked out of the conference.
I don't know if I go that far, John. I don't know if I go that far because to me.
Harsh.
It is, but perhaps fair.
That's fair.
Yeah, I know. So here's John's observations. Number one, he says, I could not watch the game. He is, and believe me, he is basically, he might as well be in Middle Earth as far away John is. I could not watch the game. I listened to the Auburn audio broadcast and followed the game on Twitter. It started at 4 a.m. for me. Midway through the fourth quarter, I boarded a train with no Wi-Fi and was disconnected from the game and the aftermath. I then was on the train across where I'm not giving away. I'll let him tell you where he was if he wants to next week. Spent the day disconnected and watching the countryside go by, and it was wonderful, and I did not dwell on the game and its outcome. Well, I was here dwelling on it for you, John, and that's fine. Number two, the limiting factor, and I'm glad you were able to relax and get away from it. We should have all been off somewhere getting away from it. Number two, the limiting factor in this team, John says, is quarterback. Peyton Thorne is like a shell-shocked soldier that has seen too much. Amen. He looks down at the pass rushers and holds the ball way too long. Auburn's coaches have worked to build him up and support and encourage him, and it has not worked. I am skeptical it will change or get better with him. Auburn may have just gotten the wrong quarterback out of the portal, and that is the whole season decided for us months ago. Ashford is who he is. He still cannot throw well. Do they try and build the offense around him now? If so, we can beat bad teams with it, but not good teams. Right, be basically like the end of last year. John says, simple truth, Auburn cannot throw the football and other teams know it. That makes us easy to defend.
That's fair.
Yeah. Number three, John says, there are plenty of execution mistakes to clean up. Auburn had three key penalties on third downs. All were drive killers. The offense failed to properly adjust when A&M brought up edge defenders to rush. The defense was not always aligned properly to stop the run. Those things are not all on the players. That is coaching and preparation.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think. Number four, the only way forward long term is to recruit better players, which I think is what we're doing. That was my comment. 2 years from now, he says, this team will be better because we have more talent. We are doing the job on the recruiting trail, and all of those guys can come in and play right away. Actually, John typed, they can come in and lay right away, which is a whole other thing that I'm not going to get into on a family program. John says, Texas A&M has way more talent than Auburn right now. They have 4 and 5 stars at quarterback and receiver and many studs on the defensive line, and that was the difference. So number five, in the short term, run the ball, try and build an offense around Ashford and his running game and protect the defense by shortening the game, ? So he's asking. John is asking, is that what we do? Of course, John is going to focus on defense.
I love armored football and I love defense.
Right. But we also, as he's saying, we need to figure out something that will move the ball down the field. And I think it's fair to say also, just like in previous games, when we put our mind to it and start running the ball, they've been effective running the ball. What has killed them every time is either penalties or turnovers, right? Either a turnover where we just fumble and lose it after driving the length of the field, or a penalty where, you know, as long as we're on, as long as we're ahead of the chains, as long as we're getting 3 or 4 or 5 yards every down, we're okay. But if you're suddenly looking at like 2nd and 15 or 2nd and 17 or 3rd and 12, now that isn't going to work, because now you got to be able to get bigger chunks of yardage in one play, and that's where it all bogs down. That's that. It reminds me of the dilemma of when we used to run the wishbone under Pat Dye, is that it was great as long as it worked, but as soon as you have one problem that crops up, you know, one thing that puts you behind the chains, suddenly you're stuck because you have no passing game really, and the only way you have to get 10 plus yards on one play is to have somebody like Bo Jackson break loose. And so, I don't know. I'm curious what you guys think. Is the answer to go to Robbie Ashford and kind of go to that Cadillac offense from Texas A&M last year? Or is the answer to try to find something in the passing game? Is it the answer to put Gurner out there? I do have, or at least I did have, the actual box score. Let me see if I can, So Thorne went 6 for 12 for 44 yards. Hey, we didn't have a single interception, but that's because we barely ever got the ball off. So Thorne was 6 of 12 for 44 yards. Gurner was 2 of 7 for 8 yards. And, Ashford was 1 of 4 for 4 yards. And, yeah, the average for the yeah, that's fine. Let's see, rushing stats. Brian Batty had the most yards, 59 yards on 8 carries. He averaged 7.4. That's pretty good. Hunter had Jarquez Hunter had 53 yards on 9 carries, 5.9 average. Sean Jackson got the one carry, but it was that one big carry late for 31 yards. I wish he could have taken that to the house. That would have been nice. Ashford had 8 carries for 25 yards. And then Damari, of course, had 2 carries for 12, but we know how that one ended. Jeremiah Cobb only got 1 carry for 1 yard. I was surprised by that. Was Cobb injured or something, or did we just were trying so hard to pass? In terms of receiving, Brian Batty caught 23 yards on 2 catches. Hooks had 18 yards on 3. Fair had 10 yards on 1. And Fairweather caught 3 passes, but for only 5 yards. That's not going to get it. All right, I'm going to get rid of that. I don't want to see those numbers anymore. Now, the other thing I have for you is a couple of other people information that I'm going to react to. Stat Tiger said, I believe on Twitter, the average distance needed to convert a third down against Texas A&M was 11.7 yards. That's what I mean when I say it's just not going to work. If third down average is 11.7 yards to go, that means that A, you're losing yardage on first and second down. You're actually going backwards and having to get, you're having to get everything on third down that you didn't get on first and second, plus more. And through 4 games, Auburn hasn't converted a third down during the third quarter. We have yet to convert a third down in the third quarter this season. We are 0 for 2023 in third down conversions in the third quarter. That is absolutely astonishing. All right, next up, Mike McClendon from the AU Sports Group, who has contributed a few things to our books the last few years. He had 10 things about this game that I'm going to react to. All right, so here's 10 points that Mike McClendon said. Some I have more to say about, some I have less. All right, number one from Mike McClendon, his top 10 things about this game. Number one, you are not going to win many games in the SEC with no passing game. Well, exactly. So do you really want to go with the Robbie Ashford run the veer, run the single wing kind of thing? I don't know. Number two, I don't think you can judge Thorne or Ashford on their performance today. In the second half in particular, the Texas A&M defensive line was just running through our offensive line like they weren't there. If it weren't for all the holding calls, we would have had 4 or 5 more sacks. Both quarterbacks had no time to throw the ball. That's an interesting point, that as bad as the holding calls were, In some cases, it probably would have been worse if we hadn't held. Because at least, even though we lost 10 yards, we didn't get our quarterback killed again, and we kept the down. So there is something to be said for holding. Who knew? Number three, the quarterbacks did not get any help at all from the guys calling the plays. With Texas A&M running through our offensive line on virtually every play, you would think we would be throwing more quick passes. We did not. Amen, amen, amen. I have been saying from the beginning, and especially I was screaming it during the A&M game, where are the screen passes? Where are the quick slants? Where are the passes into the flat? Just anything to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly. I know so many people that hate screen passes, and I understand that to a degree. I don't think screen passes should replace the regular passing game. I just think that they are a tool in your toolbox that you need to go to when the defensive line and the linebackers and the safeties and whoever else are just pinning their ears back and charging at your quarterback, right? When you see play after play, the defense is just pinning their ears back and coming. At some point, a light should go off in your head and you go, you know what? We need to do something to slow the pass rush down. And calling another drop back and survey the field play is not the thing to do to slow the pass rush down. That just encourages them. That just encourages them. So I'm all for screen passes when advisable, if you know what I mean, right? When that's an advisable thing to do, I'm for the screen pass. It just felt like we tried it maybe once. And then Mike continues, at the very least, the quarterbacks haven't been taught how to get rid of the ball in a hurry. I thought the play calling was terrible. Of course, it has been terrible all year, which makes you wonder about the guy calling the plays and running the offense. It may be time for Freeze to take back the play calling because the guy doing it now stinks. And then he says in parenthetical, I freely admit I am not sold on Philip Montgomery as the OC, and he has done absolutely nothing to make me think he is the guy for our job. All right. Number four, the OL is better, but I'm not sure what that means. It is still not very good. That's true. And I do always like to point out, though, as bad as our offensive line might be at times this year, think what our offensive line would have been like if Freeze hadn't come in and brought these guys. We'd have just had, like, you know, John and I have joked about having a little tiny wide receiver out playing running back in Tuberville's first year. We'd have had little tiny receivers out playing offensive line. If we had to, so what we have is what we have. It could have been a lot worse, but it could be a lot better. Number five, penalties will kill you. I don't know how many procedure penalties we had, but it seemed like every time we got close to doing something good, we got a procedure penalty that killed it. Exactly. It says, I'm not sure how loud that it's that loud in their stadium. I've been there. It's not. The piped-in music is very loud. The crowd and the band is not. But this many procedure penalties as a result of coaching is a result of coaching as much as anything else. All those delay-a-game penalties are a coaching issue, specifically getting the plays called and communicated on time. Those should never happen. All right, fair enough. Number six from Mike. I thought the defense played pretty well overall. When it's almost 100 degrees out there and the offense can't stay on the field for more than a couple of minutes, it is inevitable the defense will begin to wear out. Yeah, we saw that a lot the last few years. I thought we hung in there extremely well given the situation. Yeah, I mean, we limited A&M to just 27 points. And, you know, 14 of that 27 came in one little spurt in the third quarter when we kind of got behind the eight ball offense and defense. But other than that, I thought our defense played really well. Number seven, we are beginning to accumulate injuries on defense, especially in the defensive backfield. That's a real concern. Yeah, and offense too, to be fair. I believe we had two offensive linemen that were having issues that were not even there maybe. And, of course, losing Damari Alston is a terrible blow. The miracle to me is that none of our quarterbacks have gotten hurt yet. And I'm not saying I'd like to see it happen. I'm not saying I want to see our quarterbacks get hurt, but I am pointing at our quarterbacks and saying,
blame yourself.
That's right, because, I mean, you know, I mean, oh, anyway, I just remembered I didn't play the fanfare music for the fun meter. I don't think the fun meter deserved music this week, so I'm not sorry. Number eight from Mike. We are going to get killed in the next two games for sure. Probably a lot worse than today. I suspect Ole Miss will also take us to the woodshed. I guess we got Georgia this weekend. I'm thinking probably LSU the next weekend. Good Lord. And then Ole Miss. So yeah, we're looking at probably going 0-4 after starting 3-0. So we go into the little easier, a little less difficult part of our schedule with game 8, probably being 3-4, but I have hope. Hope springs eternal. It's the hope that kills you, but I've got to hope that we can spring a surprise on somebody the next 2 or 3 weeks. He says, I had hopes against Ole Miss, but with basically an anemic offense, we won't have much of a shot. I doubt we can score 20 points in total the next 3 games. That has to be one of the 2 or 3 worst offensive teams Auburn has ever put on the field. Wow. Ouch. Worse than 08, I guess. Worse than 12. That's pretty sad. Worse than 98 in some ways. Yeah. He says, I still think 6-6 is possible, although after watching the offense today, both Vandy and Mississippi State will be a lot more difficult. I agree. And finally, number 10, when you watched us today, he wrote this on Saturday. If you watched us on Saturday, it should be obvious just how much of a talent differential there is between a team like Texas A&M and Auburn. The past 3 years have been devastating to the football program. Malzahn's last year was a disaster, and both of – oh, you almost got me to say it, Mike. I mean, back up. Malzahn's last year was a disaster, and both of –
potatoes.
2 years were far worse. Between the 3 bad recruiting cycles and the talent we lost to the portal, we were in far worse shape than most people want to acknowledge. The simple fact is that we were never going to fix this in 1 year, even with a great job of bringing in talent through the portal. We are 3 to 5 years away from being a truly competitive program again, and that depends on us having great recruiting classes, great development, and being able to retain the players we have. We will be able to fill in from the portal, which will help us get through this period, but we have a very long way to go. Some of it will be bad, hopefully less than I expect. I appreciate that from Mike. I think I agree with most of everything he says there, although I try to be optimistic, and maybe things can turn around a little quicker than that, I think. I made a very popular tweet this weekend where I said we need to recognize and acknowledge what the Auburn defense is accomplishing this season. I would add to that they're riddled with injuries up and down the roster and new walking wounded or worse added each week. And with very little help from the offense, they are keeping us in games for as long as possible. All right. I don't have a whole lot else to say about the Texas A&M game. I don't think we want to spend any more time on it. We want to put it in the rearview mirror. We're going to get to the preview of the Georgia game a little later in the countdown, but now... And now for the fourth story in the countdown. And that is non-conference games. Just a couple of big non-conference... excuse me. When I don't have John interposing or Delvin interposing dialogue with me while I can clear my throat, it gets a little harder. Carry it all by yourself. One moment. Okay, just a couple of big non-conference games to look at this week. I got to talk about briefly Colorado, Oregon, Bo Nix. Oregon won 42-6. The whole country was watching this, wanting to see what Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, as he styles himself now, and his sons and his team could accomplish against probably a bigger name currently than they've played so far. 42-6. And that was, I enjoyed watching Bo have a very good game with everybody looking. So that's probably the most exposure Bo's gotten, honestly, since the 2019 Iron Bowl, and good for Bo. I did see some reporters talking about the idea that Alabama's next head coach after Saban could be Dan Lanning from Oregon. And I just want to refer you to my comments about Dan Lanning a few months ago when Auburn was in our coaching search. I'll leave it at that. Ohio State, Notre Dame, that Ohio State win was pretty stirring. And watching Ryan Day go off at the reporter on Lou Holtz and whatever else he was mad about, I don't know what the reasoning was, but anybody who wants to yell and scream about Lou Holtz, good old Senator Holtz. I'm happy to listen to the screaming, so that's fine. And then finally, Washington, Cal. You know, we do. We tune in to hope Cal plays really well to make us look better. And, of course, Washington scored 59 points on Cal. So I said two weeks ago after we beat Cal 14-10, I said Cal may not win four games this all season. I stand by that. That just shows you our offense, that we had to fight and claw to score 14. Washington scored 59 on the same defense. So we've got we have a little ways to go, guys. All right, that was the fourth story in the countdown. The third story in the countdown this week is what a little feature that John and I like to call Let's Take a Trip Around. You know where?
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Doing things a little out of order this week, but that's okay because there's things I want to talk about before and there's things I want to talk about later. All right, so Alabama beat Ole Miss 24-10, and that really surprised me that Ole Miss offense was as anemic as it was. They got a touchdown early and then just couldn't do anything against Alabama the rest of the game. That seems to be Alabama's MO this year, is having an absolute lockdown defense, letting teams score early and then just smothering them until the offense can score just enough for a decent, comfortable two-touchdown win. It's the same thing they did against South Florida last week. So they kind of play down to the competition, and whoever you are, they beat you by two touchdowns, shutting you out pretty much in the second half. So la-de-freaking-die, Alabama. The LSU-Arkansas game yet again comes down to a three-point difference, LSU 34-31 over Arkansas. Man, poor Arkansas, very much like Notre Dame in the Notre Dame-Ohio State game, and they were on about the same time, and they both ended kind of the same way, and I just felt bad for Arkansas, but LSU going to keep playing with fire. We'll see what happens. Kentucky beat Vanderbilt. I don't know the score. I don't care about the score, frankly. Georgia beat UAB 49-21. The game was not as close as the score indicates. Georgia was getting like two scores for UAB's one for a while and kind of pulled away. Georgia's big tight end looked good, of course, and we're going to see a lot of him, I'm afraid, in a few days, and that's not good. Missouri managed to get by Memphis 34-27. I got a shout out to all the Missouri knuckleheads that were blowing up my timeline on Twitter the last couple of days, because Missouri signed like a five-star player that we were in the running for, and that's fine, and I'm glad if he wants to go to Missouri, that's fine. That's his business. I simply said on Twitter I felt bad for him because he doesn't realize apparently that he's not going to get any fan support because they don't care about their team in Missouri. And, oh, the Missouri people, you know, like four of them came out of the woodwork to jump all over me, but not a single one said I was wrong. I just want to point that out. Not a single one said I was wrong. I just replied once. I said, I just want you to support your team. And not a single one of them said I was wrong. Tennessee beat UTSA, which I guess is Texas San Antonio, 45-14. Cool. South Carolina beat Mississippi State 37-30. In a game I had to go back and watch on YouTube because I don't know how it went under my radar, but I never even saw a listing of it available on TV. And it was a pretty darn good game. Mississippi State got down early. They kind of came back. They tied it, and then South Carolina won. So the fact that Mississippi State is that close to South Carolina right now makes me worry about our matchup with them later. And then finally, Florida, I am told, beat Charlotte, something called Charlotte, 22-7. I don't know what to do with that. Florida beat Charlotte 22-7. I think Steve Spurrier had a 22-point play. Florida could have scored 22 in one play back in the old days. So I don't know how they played an entire game against Charlotte. Charlotte. Okay, whatever. All right, well, that's been the third story on the countdown. And now, our collection of miscreant scofflaws and generally overpaid knuckleheads, we like to call the worst coaches in the world. Number three on our three worst coaches in the world, Lane Kiffin. Lane, it was your big chance on the big stage, and you blew it. You had a chance, Lane, to get it done, to beat Saban, to beat Alabama, and you went out there, and you showed us all why we didn't hire you. Ole Miss has just not won very many games since Lane Kiffin flirted, or I guess really more likely his agent, flirted with Auburn. Number two on the worst coaches in the world, Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo, the 12th man is a slogan, not a job requirement. When you ventured out onto the field, you actually wound up in the middle of a scoring play. Stay off the field during the plays, Jimbo. You know, there's a story of Alabama playing Rice way back in, I think it was the Bronze Age, and the huge Rice running back tore off on what was going to be like an 80-yard touchdown run along the Alabama sideline. And as he ran down the sideline, an Alabama player actually jumped off the bench and jumped on the field and tackled the guy. This is the first example of many of somebody having too much Bama in them, which I would think we would all agree would be any amount at all. The referees deliberated, and they decided to advance the ball the remainder of the length of the field and count it as a touchdown, which meant that the player coming off the bench had just nullified any chance any other player who was actually in the game might have had of catching him and preventing the score. Nice work, Bammer! And in the game on Saturday, I honestly thought Jimbo might do that. I thought he might make the tackle. Let's be honest, everybody. If it had been Bobby Petrino, he would have done it. And finally, our number one coach, worst coach in the world. This shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone who's ever listened to the show. It's
potatoes.
That's right. You ran off some of our best players, Coach. Seeing Bo Nix, J.J. Piguez, and Lord Tennyson having big games for their new teams today, or Saturday, was bittersweet. Sweet for them, bitter for Auburn. That's right, Coach.
Potatoes.
Is this week's worst coach in the world. And now, the second story in the countdown. Remember, we don't have ads on this program, but what we do have are patrons. Patrons to thank and listener questions to answer. And so, if you want to join the fun, go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange button to join our burgeoning AU Wishbone Auburn family. Here now are the fine patrons who are making up our current ranking of the best fans in the world. Samuel Salvatore, Phil, as always, says,
no! No! No, I'm devastated! I'm devastated, and they're celebrating right in front of me! This is the worst! This is the worst! No!
Yes, that was basically me on Saturday. Boris the Tiger's burner account, Carl Von Drunker, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Logan Chilton. I definitely still hate Cal, but I can still hate UMass. I now hate Texas A&M too, but that happens every other year. Ann Kangian, Bill Weathers, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, David WDE Sammons Esquire, Eric Morgan, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU fan at KSC. Mark says, if Carroll Shelby would have seen me Saturday, he would have said...
I don't speak Italian, but he ain't happy.
That's for dang sure. Matt Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Rich Reimer. Richard Stevens says, did you hear about the guy who was convicted of drugging seabirds? He left no turn unstoned.
Smoke weed every day.
And that's pretty much the coping mechanism for dealing with the game with Texas A&M there, I think, by the way, Richard. Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, William Morgan. Win Carroll wants to remind you that if Alabama ever played the 1980 Soviet hockey team, he's rooting for... Russia, number one. Iran, number one. Bama, number one. There you go. Alex Brown, Ben Bloodworth, Bleeds Orange and Blue, calibrating my fun meter in the back of...
Jones, barbecue foot massage.
In the back booth, my bad. Chris Hilton celebrating the end of Auburn's potato famine because...
You gotta get better at celebrating.
That's right. By the way, it's funny. Just having John on the line seems to make this go smoother than when I'm doing it all myself. Even though John's usually like getting the listener questions ready and stuff at this point while I'm doing this. And yet just knowing he's there somehow makes this all smoother. I'm kind of frantically... moving the mouse around, pushing buttons, checking notes. I feel like my hair is on fire right now, and I don't even have much hair. What hair I have is on fire. Dan Thompson, Earl Ricks, Bobby.
Frosty!
I love it. I love it. Harry Zagger, welcome aboard. Hopefully, Auburn is the thorn in the SEC side. I'm beginning to think the thorn is in our side. H-Town Danny. Oh, no. I have a pet termite. I named him Clint. Clint eats wood. There you go. I ordered a chicken and an egg from Amazon. I'll let you know. Sleazy 76 Tiger Esquire, Sleazy Shyster for...
Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage.
Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage remains evergreen, right? It's always popular with the patrons. Jacob and Robin Fleming, Catherine England. Man, I'm running around like my hair's on fire here. Kevin Smith, Lane Middleton, Mickey B. No, and Fights Like Gaston, Algo Rhythm and Blues, Paul Miles, Rusty Owens, Safe Travels, John. Amen. Shane Bailey. Let me swallow. Spanky, I am at the bottom of this list because...
God bless it!
Monkey boy.
Funny thing is that Spanky's not anywhere near the bottom of this list, but okay. Steve Harlan, Theodore Gary, Todd Robinson, Warhammer 6, WDE Richie, start of SEC play.
Tonight's forecast, a freeze is coming.
I'm afraid that's what Montgomery's going to be hearing. Coach Montgomery?
Yes.
I just looked down the hall and...
Tonight's forecast, a freeze is coming.
Yeah, it might be. Let me see. Weagle Weagle, Wes Atkinson, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger. What? Boris was going to co-host the show tonight, but he was just too aggravated about Saturday, so he didn't want to condescend to come on board. He's just he's upstairs sulking on the couch. Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Colby Butler, Corey Smyre. He's actually kind of in denial. He doesn't believe we ever lose. David D, David Simpson, good old Die Bama at
Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage.
Josh Teal, Just Wait Till Next Year, Kevin Mahan, Luther and Kelly Ottaway, Melissa Blackstone, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, and our one-time and anonymous donors. Pausing the sleaze jokes out of respect for the season, but just know I'm still thinking it. Well, you may not be the only one at this point, Josh, but we'll see. Philip Martin, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shannon Butson, Spider-Man has a winter jacket. It's made of Mediterranean flatbed. We call it flatbread. We call it a pizza parka. Steve in Houston. Soundboard's doing some weird things today. It's making the little squinchy noise at the end. I don't know what's up with that. I got the John quotes to work this week by just not putting them on the soundboard and just playing them straight out of the audio files. like MP3s. Steve in Houston, I hate that because I just paid a bunch of money to get the extra soundboards. It's really annoying. Steve in Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Weagle87, Woody the Jag, at the Mad Reaper Pepper Company on Instagram, Alex Nguyen, AU Falling Up, Ben Amos, Ben Regis, Brant Rumble, Brian Albanese. Can we hope Georgia's coach is Maxwell Smart instead of Kirby Smart? It'd be fine with me. Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Chris Braun, Clay Henson, Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, Darren Pyle, Elizabeth Donald. We
gotta get better at celebrating.
I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor, Jeremiah Schumann, Jim McCrory, Joseph A. Miller, that'd be Joey Miller, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains. Rains says the barbecue.
You have failed me for the last time.
That may be true, aka Auburn Dad for Life. Mark Squire, MVP, captivating Kathy Bright.
Your love of the halfling's leaf has clearly slowed your mind.
I was ready this time. My favorite button on the remote is pause. I am Tiger.
Please clap.
New York Tiger says, beat the dog, beat the dog, beat the damn dog. War Eagle. Well, I agree with that. I'll even give you a...
Oh, my God!
That's a Georgia announcer reacting to the miracle in Jordan-Hare. Paul Bankson, Rich Hammett, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis, Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family, Tim Sauls, Trevor Johnson, War Eagle Delvin. Oh, there's a heads up to Delvin, War Eagle Delvin. And why are you booing John? He's right. Plus our one-time and anonymous donors. Go to www.auwishbone.com and we'll have John back to react to these things in just a few days. And in fact, I had
that's fair.
Yeah. Man, if things go right Saturday, John can say
we annihilated them and it was glorious.
Oh, that'll be so nice if we could say that, but we'll see. So now I've got a couple more things in the second story part here. Fantasy Formula One update really quickly. I'm very, very excited. I've got to give an update on the Fantasy Formula One League with just a few races to go. After languishing in fifth place for most of the season, I have climbed all the way up now, week after week, to second. So the number one team is Teamy McTeamface, but number two and less than 100 points behind is Scuderia Toro Plexico. Yes, I've been fighting so hard to get up the list. Number three is Tiger Transit. Number four is Cheeky Nando's. And number five is Sir Bacon the First. Let's see. I've got to update the SEC weekly pick'em contest. And I'll just hit a few highlights here. Number one is Bill Miner with 43 points. He's gotten 43 games right and only six wrong this season. That's amazing. Patrick is number two now. Papa Todd, 96, two AUs. Number five is
Frosty.
Number six is Bo Nose. Number seven is Big AU Fan WHB. Number eight is Josh CRBT. Number nine is Fun Meter Calibration. And number 10 is Sugarloaf Black Ice. I have to throw in, because I love it so much, that number 11 is...
There they are.
Oh, I love it. I love that that became a name, yeah. Meanwhile, John is hovering just below the top 10 in number 17 space. And I believe I am 31. I've gotten 38 right and 11 wrong. And John has gotten 40 right and 9 wrong. So he's up by 2 games on me, but it's early days yet, baby. All right. Now, let's see. I will point out again, for those that are into such things, that John and I have written a new book. The first draft is finished. I'm going to go back and, like, I kind of do my glossing, copy editing, smoothing draft before it's ready for the publisher. I'll be doing that a little bit later in the fall, and hopefully we'll have an announcement soon on YouTube about what it's about. I will show you the cover, and we'll talk about maybe we're going to do a Kickstarter for it so you can get you like a hardcover for Christmas or something to give to your loved ones for Christmas. So we'll have more announcements about that coming up soon. Before we get out of the second story on the countdown, we do have to do the old...
Thank you. Order, questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
And we did get a few big listener questions. Not a ton of questions, but we got some big ones. And then, of course, first up, though, was Samuel Salvatore, our awesome patron Samuel Salvatore, that we appreciate to the end of the world and back. Hello, guys, and War Eagle, do you know that is two games in a row at College Station without scoring an offensive touchdown, 2021 and 2023? I didn't realize we didn't score an offensive touchdown in 2021, but I'm not surprised because John and I were at that game. It's mainly just a blur. The only thing I really remember from that game is Torchy's Tacos and going out on the field the day before the game and then getting COVID. So I hope that folks had the good parts and not the bad parts this time. And by the way, I'm excited that we're going to go to Arkansas this year, and Arkansas does have a Torchy's Tacos in Fayetteville. I'm so excited. As long as I don't get COVID, I think it'll all be fine. Let's see. Cato says, hey, fellas, I keep seeing people talk about how all the offensive woes are simply because of Potato screwing us over, and we'd be totally good right now if it wasn't for our roster. I got to ask, are we all watching the same team? There's way more going on than simply bad roster. Nobody on offense is playing up to what they have in the past. Our starting quarterback took Michigan State to 11-2 just a couple of years ago, but can only manage 10 total yards on Saturday. To be clear, Kyle Frazier got benched after putting 70 yards on A&M in 2012, and Peyton Thorne managed 10. Our three quarterbacks combined averaged only 2.4 passing yards per attempt, the lowest average since the 2016 Georgia game where Sean White injured his shoulder and didn't tell the coaches. Sean White basically had his arm amputated and was using mental telepathy to throw the ball in that game, and it wasn't working too well. That was my interjection. Back to Cato. We went on in the offseason about how we improved our roster, bringing in this four-star receiver from Ohio State, and yet our leading receiver on Saturday was our running back who had two catches for 23 yards. FCS Tennessee Martin went up against Georgia a couple of weeks back, and they outperformed us in every single major offensive statistic. So we can drop this mess about how it's our can we drop this mess about it's our roster holding us back? Final stand. I'm sorry. Final stat, and my rant is over. In the 49-0 blowout that was the 2012 Iron Bowl, thanks for that memory, Cato, Jonathan Wallace, good old Jonathan, a coach at Kansas now, Jonathan Wallace accounted for 77 total yards by himself. On Saturday, our three quarterbacks combined for 44 yards. All those freeze warnings y'all keep talking about, I had no idea those were meant to be literal warnings about our offense. Thanks, Cato, the new starting QB. Hey, I am totally willing to let Cato get in there and throw some passes, because what could it hurt? All right, next up in the listener questions from Buddy Jones. Hi, Van and John. I could only watch the first half and the first few minutes of the second half, which sounds like what John did, enough to see us do nothing on our first possession and to see A&M's backup quarterback go right down the field as if we had put a totally different bunch of defensive players on the field. What? Have we never seen a left-handed quarterback before? We've seen this before with Petrino just a few years ago. Anyway, he says, my question has to do with the offensive line. By my watching, it seemed most of the problems with the offense started with the OL. Peyton was pressured almost every time he took the snap. That's fair, as John would say.
That's fair.
Yeah. I listened to Freeze and to Locked On Auburn, and they talked about how many times we had open receivers and Peyton didn't find them. Did he have a chance to find them? Thanks, Buddy Jones. As John said.
That's fair.
It is. And, I think that the offensive line has been a problem. I think that if the offensive line was playing better, our running game would be playing better, and then the passing would be there more. It's the fact that neither one is working great is the big problem. And like I said, even when we get our offense running, we then make a catastrophic mistake. Okay, from Rusty Owens. Gentlemen, I don't claim to be an expert in football or a prophet of any kind. However, It was evident from the opening series that Auburn hadn't been holding back some sort of mystery plays to unleash on Jimbo and company. So to ask a question in child development, is this a question of nature or nurture? In football terms, was this a lack of Jimmys and Joes or X's and O's? To me, it is easy to blame the poor recruiting the last few years, but this is the same coach who turned one of our cast-off quarterbacks into an NFL draft pick. What percentage would you assign blame to this performance? I know. It's a tough question, Rusty. I mean, if we had some specific number, it would really help. I'm right now, I'm just in the business of apportioning blame to everybody evenly and let God sort it out. And by that, I mean, you know, the good Lord, and I mean the football gods, and I mean our head coach and our offensive coordinator and our offensive line coach. And let's just put it this way. You know there is a fire lit under some rear ends in the football facility this week. They know. They are well aware that what we've accomplished so far this season has not been acceptable, and particularly on Saturday, it was embarrassing, and they're well aware. I mean, they have the capital stored away, which is A, they're brand new, B, the recruiting's going well, right? That's two good things in your waiting down on that side of the scale. But then you lay a turd out there on the field like we did on Saturday, and that scale starts to tilt back even again, or maybe even tilt back the other way. So I think that they're all very well aware that they got to get their ducks in a row and got to get their get this whatever other metaphors you want to mix with me out here to say we got to improve. We got to improve. All right, finally from Stephen Sorrell, or Sorrell. My apologies, Stephen. I'm not sure how you pronounce your last name. But he says, quote, honk if you sacked an Auburn QB, unquote. I was thinking about Brody when I was watching that game. Can we just fast forward through the next weekend? Well, you know what? I can. I go ahead and tell y'all, I'm going to be a guest again at Archon St. Louis, the St. Louis science fiction, fantasy, comics, whatever convention. And I'm actually on panels all day Saturday, just like at Dragon Con. And I was really mad that Dragon Con was keeping me from seeing Auburn on the first Saturday. I have no problem whatsoever. I am fine with having a pre-existing a prior commitment for my time. I'll be talking about stuff that is very fun and there's no win or lose to it. And I'll keep an eye on the Auburn game, of course, but I will not be crying because I'm not watching it live. So yeah. He also says, hopefully this weekend's show will be the best therapy you guys have provided yet. Well, this guy, I don't know about John. John is off, you know, in the mines of Moria or something. And so, he's having therapy from his travels. Oh, no pun intended there. I just said Lord of the Rings reference. This one stung like Sting. Yeah. War Eagle guys, I think I hear Bruce Pearl off in the distance shouting, must be about time for basketball. I tell you what, I'm ready for hoops action because I think our basketball team's going to be pretty good this year. And, of course, John and I will cover that very thoroughly. That has been listener questions. Now the first story on the countdown, the Georgia game preview as best I can do it. We're going to start off our Georgia game preview, and this isn't going to last very long. They're really, really good. They play down to the competition. They do play down to the competition. We know that. They play down to UAB for a half, but they can score, and they've got a defense. We know this. And their running backs continue to just run over people with a good offensive line. They don't need a great quarterback. So John says Georgia can do, I guess to us and in general, what A&M did. Georgia's receivers are not as good, but they have the tight end Bowers, and we cannot cover that guy. Our only hope is this. It is their quarterback's first road game, and it is in Jordan-Hare. Can we get pressure on him, confuse him, and create a few turnovers? The offense needs some help from the defense and special teams in this game. By the way, I want to interject here very quickly about our special teams. What about Alex McPherson and that 53-yard field goal? I feel like we remain, right? How many years have John and I said what a great line of kickers we always have, and we're back. There's at least the safety net of knowing that when we have to have some points, Alex McPherson can knock it in from anywhere on the field. All right. Georgia has given up running yards to the teams it has played, so that is something to keep an eye on. All right. So there's John's recipe for a shocking upset. Get pressure on their quarterback, rattle him, confuse him, remind him he is in Jordan-Hare Stadium, create some turnovers, get some defensive scores, have McPherson knock the kicks in from wherever he ends up, basically like Gus the mule, not Gus the coach, and then find something on offense so we're not just putting the defense right back out there on the field again. If we can do all those things, and maybe Eugene Asante can get another touchdown too. If we can do all those things, maybe we can make it close. And who knows what can happen then. But, I mean, that's really it. That's all the Georgia game preview I have for you guys, because I'm looking for a weakness, and that may be it. That's John's suggested his weakness is going after a quarterback. And we'll see. My suggestion is go to a sci-fi con and check the scoreboard occasionally, and there you go. I was going to run down quickly while we're talking about Georgia. It's my big opportunity. I was going to run down quickly some stories because I went to every Auburn-Georgia game between 1993 and 2003 in Athens, okay, because I lived in Lawrenceville most of those years, a lot of those years. And I have some stories I'm going to tell you really quickly. 1993, we go over there, and Auburn was 9-0, and I made up a bunch of T-shirts beforehand, brought them into the stadium. They all were printed up navy blue, and they said 10-0 and one to go. And when it looked obvious toward the end that Auburn was going to win, there in Sanford Stadium, in the middle of all the Georgia fans, I busted open the bag and started handing them out to all my friends sitting around me. We all put on these shirts that said 10-0 and one to go, and the Georgia fans lost their freaking mind. 1995, one of the probably the coldest football game I've ever gone to. Freezing cold game. I even couldn't find where I'd parked the car after that game because all of Athens, all of Georgia campus kind of looks the same. And it was freezing cold, and I remember they were ripping out the hedges, both Auburn and Georgia fans ripping out the hedges at the end of that game because they were going to redo the hedges after the Olympics that were being played there in 96 the next summer. And so I was really wanting to set my little piece of hedge on fire because I was so cold. 1997 was the year, I believe. Yeah, I went over there, and I had on an Auburn shirt, bright orange and blue, whatever, Auburn shirt. But I had my Georgetown jacket over it with the little Georgetown Bulldog, the Hoya dog. And I found a Georgia fan that had an extra ticket. I bought it from him. And then as soon as he handed it to me and I handed him the money, I unzipped my jacket, revealed my orange and blue. He just went, ugh. I sat there in the middle of a giant section of red and black clad Bulldogs. And every time we scored, and we scored a lot that year and beat the tails in, I was standing up yelling and screaming. And they were mad. They're like, you know, they don't like me there doing that. I said, tell me one bad thing I said about Georgia. I was cheering for Carsten Bailey. I was cheering for Damian Craig. It was spectacular. This is a game I had the good conversation with Cole Kublik on the show a couple of years ago about. 1999, this was the Ronnie Daniels and Ben Leard go off game. We had no running back, so we just kept throwing the ball to Ronnie Daniels. Nobody could tackle him. And this was the game, actually, was funny. I had bought three tickets, one for me, one for my friend David, the Georgia fan, and one for his girlfriend. The three of us were going to go. And I couldn't find the tickets, and it was getting time to go. I had to drive from Lawrenceville all the way over to Athens and meet them, and I couldn't find the tickets. So I drove all the way to Athens with no tickets, scalped three more tickets at my own expense. We went to the game. Watched Ronnie Daniels destroy Georgia. He sat in the middle between me and his girlfriend, and every time Auburn would score, she was an Auburn fan, every time we would score, we would high-five over his head. It was glorious. I got back home in the middle of the night and found the tickets in my drawer. 2001 was the Cadillac gets 40 carries as a freshman game, where Tuberville famously told Mark Richt in the SEC, you better be able to run the ball. And that was a fun, fun game. 2003 is the only Auburn game I've ever left at halftime because we were so bad and getting destroyed. And I was, the ticket I had ended up being in the middle of the Georgia student section somehow. I don't know how that happened. I didn't mean to buy a Georgia student ticket, but I ended up with one. And they were just giving me crap the entire time. And at halftime, I knew it wasn't going to get any better. And I just left. I have no regrets. No regrets on that one, baby. And finally, 2005, the funny thing there was I just was back from Singapore. I had just gotten back from living in Singapore that year. And I was back in Lawrenceville again, renting a room from somebody until I could get settled back in the United States. And Auburn played Georgia, and I was just a short distance away, but I didn't have any money at all. And so I went to a bar in Lawrenceville full of Georgia people. And, of course, we scored at the end and won that huge, you know, that was the catch and then the field goal at the very end. The fourth and 10 or whatever from Cox to Ace, I believe. And then, yeah. And anyway, I went bananas. The whole bar was, they were ready to murder me. It was pretty fun. It was just like being in the middle of the Georgia section. So that's my fun, quick rundown. Games from 1993 to 2005. And now, final comment and things I promised not to tell. And this is a story I did promise not to tell, and I'm going to tell it anyway because I can and because nobody's listening at this point anyway. On this segment, which is things I promise not to tell at the end of countdown. So, here's the story we've never told on the show before, but I'm going to tell it now because John's not here to stop me. This is the story as I heard it. Do with this what you will. It may be completely wrong, and I want to stress that this is all alleged. Allegedly. But allegedly, when good old
Potato
left Auburn, he took an Auburn University car with him to Idaho. A car that belonged to Auburn, not to him. And he took it to Idaho with him. Auburn told him, you need to bring that back. That's not your car. And he said nothing. He just ignored them and kept the car. So finally, and remember, this is all allegedly. So finally, Auburn allegedly flew a university employee, intern or whatever, up to Idaho with a one-way ticket and a set of the car's spare keys. Dude took like an Uber to Potato's house when nobody was home, got in the car, cranked it up, and drove it all the way back to Auburn from Idaho. I just like to imagine the look on good old
Potato's
face when he got home from wherever or got up the next morning or whatever he was doing, spending all that sweet Auburn buyout money, and then realized, quote, his, unquote, car was missing. How quickly do you suppose he figured out what had happened? Did he call Auburn up and say, you know that car you wanted back? Well, you're not getting it back because it's been stolen. And Auburn said, actually, no, it hasn't been stolen. Well, yes, it was stolen, but it's not stolen anymore. So one of those things happened. And I just like to think, or maybe he just looked out there and said, well, easy come, easy go. Win a few, lose a few. Or in my case as Auburn coach, lose a few. All right, this has been the AU Wishbone Countdown for September 26th, 2023. Thank the Lord, John returns next week. And I will just say to all the Auburn family and the AU Wishbone family, War Eagle everybody, and we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.